Assalamu alaikum, everyone, and welcome back to Vortex of Truth. My name is Neema Jabbi, and I am delighted to have you join me on this Friday afternoon. Vortex of Truth is a show where we use fiction as a tool to spark empathy and create questions in the minds of our listeners as to what they themselves would do were they in the situations our characters find themselves in. We also cover stories that should serve as mild warnings or help to explain and allow listeners to understand the struggles that others go through. Today, we have two sketches lined up, the first called The Scent of Tea and the second called Letters to Baby. These are both quite emotional sketches and they don't end all too happily. Even so, we hope you find benefit in listening to them and that they help you to view the world and the people around you more complexly. As I mentioned, our first sketch for today is called The Scent of Tea. Here we go. The scent of a perfectly brewed cup of tea surrounded me and I immediately began to smile. No matter where I was, no matter how sore my heart and tattered my spirit, a good cup of tea always made me feel a little better. It was our ritual, you see. Every time we saw one another, there was tea. Even on the days when it was blisteringly hot and I couldn't bear the thought of even a hot meal, there was still tea. We met over a cup of tea, her and I, and now tea and she have become so intertwined in my mind that every sip results in an outpouring of memories with her at the center. I miss her dearly, this woman. I mourn the cups of tea that she will never sit across from me and drink, and I resent the fact that none of the countless cups I drink are ever as sweet as those we shared. By the way I've spoken of her, you may think that we were partners, but that is not the case. We were sisters. We met when she was 18 and I 17. She had just finished high school while I was still struggling through my last year. By some stroke of fate, we had both decided to spend the day at a very popular cafe. I, being an early riser, had gotten there just after it opened and had claimed a table for myself. She, on the other hand, had arrived after the last seat had been taken. That is, except for the one across from me. I am not a friendly person by nature, and I have never looked approachable in my life. Not even as a child. Despite this, she came up to me and asked if she could share my table. She was so bright, not even I could say no. We spent an entire day in that cafe, leaving only once the staff had begun stacking chairs on tables. That day was the first time that we shared a cup of tea. In fact, we shared a pot. We discovered that we had much in common. A passion for good books, wicked senses of humor, and family lives that left much to be desired. The little cafe that we first met in closed not long after, but our friendship endured. We found other places to meet and share our days, some nicer than others. It became a game between the two of us to find the best and worst tea being served in town. Eventually, she even invited me to her home. We had confided so much in one another that she felt brave enough to allow me to see that, knowing that I would not judge her, just as she would not judge me by my route. Even when she went on to university and I began to feel the stress of my final year of high school, we made time for one another. Those tea times became my safety blanket and I clung to them, craving their routine in a time when everything else was chaos. Time passed, and we grew from girl to woman. This was when the trouble started. My family, while functional, would never have dreamed of trying to marry me off. Or perhaps it was that they didn't believe anyone would want me. Either way, I was spared the indignity of being evaluated like a product. My sister, however, she was beautiful and charismatic. And her parents were the greediest people I have ever had the pleasure of meeting. Not content with controlling their daughter's career path so they could benefit from her salary, they turned their eyes to the money that she would fetch. My poor sister was badgered day and night. Anything that could possibly turn a young man off of her was attacked until the floor was gone. Many wonderful men did wish to marry my darling sister, but the money they offered was never high enough to suit her parents. It was cold comfort to me that no one malicious ever managed to satisfy them either. I saw her withering before my eyes. The constant criticism, the effort of trying to meet the impossible standards she was being held against, and the craving she held for a true partner were eating at her. I began to make mad plans to run far and fast from the suffocating cage we were being held in until we found freedom. One day, though, a miracle seemed to have occurred. A young, rich man had come to meet my sister, and her family was in such an uproar about it that the gossip had passed through the entire town a full day before he arrived. I knew that my sister would catch this so-called prince's eye. How could she not? She was beautiful, and rich men knew beauty. I was right, of course. He proposed that very night. The miracle, however, was that she seemed to be as captivated by him as he by her. I will admit to jealousy. I had been the most important person in my sister's life for the past 5 years, and it stung to have someone else capture her love and attention. I soon got over this, though. Just seeing the happiness on her face made me love him a little, for her sake. My own home life was deteriorating around me as her happily ever after was being built. I was born into a family that resented being tied together. My parents made a series of bad decisions, starting with choosing to drink like fish and culminating in a pregnancy that brought no one joy. My father was forced to either marry my mother or be disinherited by his wealthy parents. My mother was shunned by her own religious family. Thus was born a very unhappy partnership, punctuated by numerous bouts of infidelity on both sides. Just after my sister's engagement, my parents announced their divorce. It seemed that my mother had fallen madly in love with her latest fling and had demanded a divorce from my father, for this was not out of any desire to save their marriage, but simply because he refused to allow her to be the one to end things. The dubious honor of mediating had fallen on me, and despite it that I may have done, I did see the duty to help. In all of this chaos, my sister and I rarely had time for ourselves. Tea time had shrunk from chats that lasted hours to 5 minutes snuck here and there with disposable cups in our hands. The divorce being finalized did not signal the end to my problems that it should have. It left me homeless. So only a week's notice, and I frantically began to search for both a job and a place to live. A week before my sister's wedding, I had finally been allowed to catch my breath. I insisted on spending at least an hour with her, and achieved it through a combination of threats, trickery, and outright flirting. We spent a lovely hour talking about everything and nothing and everything in between, and if she was distant at times, I chalked it up to wedding her. I was heartbreakingly wrong. My darling sister's wedding day finally arrived. I had longed to spend the previous night with her to savor the last moments we'd have together. I was prepared to sacrifice the pay that I would get for that night and eat directly for the week. It would be worth it for the time we had together. But this date time. My sister's family refused to let me spend the night in their home. This did not surprise me much, as they had never taken me. I did not possess the charm and kindness of my older sister, and found it difficult to keep my disdain of them from my face on the occasions that we interacted with one another. In the end, I had to content myself with arriving at their doorstep an hour after dawn. It did soothe me to imagine the frazzled expressions on their faces as I woke them from their slumber. The first indication that something was amiss came as I was walking up to the door. I could hear raised voices from inside, something that rarely occurred in this house. My sister's family favored biting sarcasm and pointed comments as opposed to the knockdown, drag-out fight that seemed to be happening behind closed doors. When I was finally allowed inside, I went straight to my sister, concerned beyond words. She was sensitive. The years of her parents' harsh treatment had yet to harden her heart against them, and she still craved their approval. I was convinced utterly ignorant that I would find her a shattered mess. Worryingly, this was not the case. Even more worryingly, she refused to tell me what had happened, dismissing it as a misunderstanding. This was the very first time that I realized all was not well with my sister. It was already far too late. How I wish that I had clung to her that day. How I wish that I had forced the truth from her lips. How I wish that I had saved her. Instead, I let her slip away. My sister had always had a talent for deception. Such was the necessity with a fractured home life as we had. She used her bright, happy smile to hide a wealth of ugliness. But she had never before been able to fool me. Not until now. By the time I found out the truth, the picturesque, happily ever after that I had been imagining for my beautiful sister was a sham. She was irrevocably changed. One day, less than a year into my sister's marriage, I unexpectedly found myself with some free time and chose to visit her in her new home. She was alone, as she often was. Her husband was away on business. Later, I would realize with horror that I had never been allowed to see her when her husband was in the house. We shared a pot of tea, as we always did. At the time, I was still happily oblivious and spent the afternoon chatting about complete nonsense. My wake-up call came after she'd excused herself to take a quick shower. We were still comfortable enough with one another, but she simply left me to amuse myself while she got ready for the day. I barged in on her and I saw. I saw bruises. I saw scars. I saw skeletal frame. I saw my own failure. Right in front of my eyes, my sister had been suffering, unable to scream for my help. Even as I stood there, stupid with shock, she began to stammer out excuses. She assured me over and over that she was fine, that things had just got out of hand. She was insistent, so insistent, my sister. She was determined to save me, but I paid no mind. I had seen, but not enough. I was determined to save my sister, and I was still blind to what her husband had. That day, I signed my sister's death warrant. That day was the last time I saw my sister. The next day, she was dead. I still did not know the true circumstances of my sister's death. I now know that her husband had overheard us, every word of the stupid plans that I made when I was fussing over her. I don't know if she died protecting me, or simply because, despite herself above water, I've grown too toxic. Scent of tea was once an answer to the happiness. It allowed me to relive happy times with my sister. Now, I let the illusion of that happiness for a mere moment before my senses are overwhelmed with the heartache and despair of that day. Every cup of tea I brew, every morning, yet again. All right, that was the scent of tea, our first sketch for today, where we tackle the sadly not unheard of scenario where a young woman is lured into an abusive relationship and her loved ones either don't understand what's going on or they delude themselves into thinking that they're mistaken. It is a sad truth that predators are often the most charming people in the room, having learned to camouflage their desires in order to prey on the vulnerable. In this sketch, we see this kind of relationship play out from the eyes of a very invested observer, close and very worried about the young woman who's being trapped into a terrible situation. We see that the young woman, the narrator's sister, had a troubling home life, which perhaps was part of the reason that she's so willing to jump into a new situation, even though there were alarm bells ringing in her head. We see that the fractured family was quite interested in getting that daughter off of their hands rather than vetting their potential son-in-law, and we see that very, very quickly abuse can escalate into something that is life-threatening. Something to make note of is that predators often isolate the people that they abuse to control them and make them feel hopeless. If a victim doesn't have a support system that they can turn to, or even if they do have that support system but feel cut off from it, the easier to manipulate and mold to the purchaser's wishes. So, just a quick word of advice, should you come across this kind of situation, ask if you feel uncomfortable, ask if you think that there might be something wrong. Do it delicately if you have to, yes, but do ask. Don't ignore warning signs and bad feelings for the sake of keeping the peace. That's one of our traditions that really needs to be left very firmly in the past. In the sketch, we also see from the narrative that there's a ton of guilt for the fact that she missed signs, and there's a good reason for that. Our relationships with our loved ones really should be bonds that we work to keep strong, and most importantly, we need to ensure that our bonds with one another are strong in terms of honesty and communication. They need to be our top priorities. Trauma, suffering, illness, all of these hardships are all too often suffered in silence by people who wish to not be a burden or feel shame over what's happening to them. They feel as though they should be able to defend themselves or get themselves out of their bad situation, and they feel foolish, or they feel as though they deserve what's coming to them. We really do need to embrace open communication with our spouses, our children, our friends, our parents, everyone that we care for. It pays off far more often than it doesn't. That's the end of our final sketch, of our first sketch last for today. And a final note that abuse doesn't often show itself very, very openly. And you really do need to be very, very careful when you're entering into a relationship. Don't think that because someone is charming and likable that you can just skip the checking and the doing your research. We are going to take a break now, and after that we will move on to sketch 2, which is called Letters to Baby, and also deals with communication quite extensively, specifically communication between a father and their child. Times are really changing, and so are attitudes towards communication and freely showing love to one's children. But there was still a time not so long ago, and that there are still spaces out there where there is this mentality that's still enduring, that men should not be emotionally expressive other than when they're angry. It is incredibly damaging to deny and suppress emotion that way, and most often what it does is cause hardship and broken relationships. We will be continuing to discuss that when we come back after the break. This has been Project of Truth, and we hope you join us after the break, inshallah.